This is the Rob Call Bottom Up Radio Show, WNJC 1360, Progressive Liberal Talk Radio. The news you need to know that you don't get anywhere else.
And hello, and it's another Wednesday night. That means we're talking Progressive Liberal Talk Radio, and it should be a fun night. Got some interesting things to discuss. This is the Rob Call Bottom Up Radio Show, WNJC 1360 AM. I have to talk about a couple things. Yesterday, the Senate Finance Committee had the new president of the United States, Olympia Snow. Didn't you know that? She's now the new president of the United States. She seems to have more power than Barack Obama. She cast her grace upon the garbage that was Max Baucus's bill that he did with the blessing and contentment of the insurance companies. So now everything's good, right? You know, all the news and media are saying everything's going smoothly for Barack, and you know, maybe she'll vote on it, you know, afterwards. So now what's happening is they have to go and put this together. They've got the bill from the House, which includes a public option. They've got the bill from the Senate, which does not include a public option. And there are a group of people who are going to work on this. Rahm Emanuel and Max Baucus and Harry Reid and Chris Dodd and I forget who else. The bottom line is the only person there who is a public option advocate, public option, just public option, which really sucks and is not worth much compared to what we really should have and deserve in this country, which is single-payer insurance. The only person who supports public option out of that whole motley crew is Chris Dodd, and he is basically a sellout who should lose his job because of the stuff he's done in the world of finance. So basically, the American people are now depending on a bunch of sellouts and dinos and blue dogs to give them decent health insurance, and this is what Obama's got now. Oh, but he's got Rahm Emanuel there. He's the guy who brought the blue dogs to the Congress. So, good luck. I think we're going to see in 2010 that the Democrats are going to be routed. The only thing is, worse than the Democrats, though, are the Republicans. They're both disgusting. So what does that leave us with? I wrote a couple articles lately. Since 2005, I've written over 1,000 articles, and two that I wrote recently. One was about Harry Reid. I think he is going to lose his job come this election. That's just a couple weeks. And I think he's going to end up becoming a lobbyist for the health insurance companies, just like Tom Daschle did. So there's a history of this. But, you know, the way he's been acting, it sure looks that way. And he hasn't had the guts and the leadership to do the job that he was given the power to do. So we're screwed. Then I wrote a piece about the Senate. America is screwed, really. America is screwed because it's got a system of government that was instituted 230 years ago. And, oh, boy, that's our guest calling, trying to call me. What do I do? All right. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take the call and then conference it. You can what?
I can play a song for you in the meantime.
Don't play it. This is just going to take a second. I'm going to add the call. You there? Pam? That didn't work. Hello? All right, so I guess I'm just going to do the thing here. That may be my guest is having trouble getting in. Means I have to check my email. How logistics work here in this world. So I basically had this theory that she wants to know what time to call in. I tell her now. Hello? That's my producer making noises in the background. Okay, so basically here's the deal. We're screwed by Harry Reid. We're screwed by Max Baucus. We're screwed by Max Baucus, who represents about 700,000 people. His state has 700,000 people. Olympia Snow's state has about 1.2 million people. My state has about 20 million people. California has about 40 million people. The people of Texas have about 26 million people. It's just wrong. It's just wrong. To the people in America. It just doesn't work anymore. And the tragic thing is it could be that there's no way to fix this. It just should not be that a state that has 500 or 700,000 people or 1.2 million people gets two senators with the same influence as these huge states. And we need to fix this. What we need to do is throw out the Senate. Get rid of it altogether, or come up with a new way of dealing with the Senate that has still keep 100 people, but merge together some states. You don't have to merge the states together, but make them work together as groups. You know, it would almost be like a parliament. That's my idea. Take the world that we... Pam's here. This is my crazy idea. My crazy idea is get rid of the Senate as we now have it and do something that looks more like a parliament. In most other modern democracies, they have parliaments. Why? Because they're more flexible, they're more adaptable, and they're more representative and provide a more representative kind of government. And that's what we need to do in the United States. We got to get rid of these people. Now, you know, we might lose Bernie Sanders, or maybe we wouldn't. Maybe Vermont would get... My idea is that if there are 310 million people, then with 100 Senate seats, there ought to be 3.1 or 3.01 million people for each senator. And somehow, states have to come together. So if California has 36 million people, then they would get 12 Senate seats. If Texas has 26, they would get... almost nine, and if they got together with another state that was conservative like Wyoming, then they could get another Senate seat out of it, or they would get one for Wyoming, maybe. And they would work out to get the representation the way they want it there. And it's a crazy idea, but we need to do something, because America is in deep trouble, and it's not going to survive. America is not going to survive. People on all sides are really unhappy, and they have good reasons to be unhappy, even though they're very diverse reasons. So, in a moment, I'm going to bring our guest into the conversation here, but first, we have an ad. It's been a while, but we now have a sponsor for the show. And what I feel really good about is I got to know the sponsor's product. Now, the sponsor is a team, actually. It's the Za Restaurant and Hopewell Valley Vineyards. They're in Pennington, New Jersey, which is just north of Princeton. If you're taking I-95, it's just below the Princeton exit, I think. You map west your way there. But I went there on Sunday, and they have this special that they're offering. It's called Sideways Sundays. First, you go to the Hopewell Valley Vineyards. You get some wine for dinner, maybe have to do a tasting for $5, which was really fun. Or maybe sit outside, have a bottle of wine, and there's a deck that's just kind of above the vineyard, so you look down on the vineyards, and it's just gorgeous. And to get there, you've got to drive through horse country and cornfields, and there's even cattle you drive past. So you're out there. And then you drive a mile to the Za restaurant. The website is zarestaurants.com. Have a meal, and when you're done, you get a gift certificate worth $25. And I got to tell you, you know, when you have a meal, in a really good restaurant, there are moments when you just take a bite and all of a sudden something goes from your tongue to your brain and it goes like, zing, I'm happy, this is amazing. Well, that happened to me when I was having the salad there, let alone when I had the main course, which was a lobster and shrimp tempura, and then the dinner, this chocolate souffle. It was just unbelievable. Now, this sponsor of ours, Zai Restaurant and Hopewell Valley Vineyards, they come to us because they're supporting Op-Ed News and Rob Cole Bottom-Up Radio Show. Be very clear about that. It can be a hike to get to Pennington, up north of Princeton, but if you're living in South Jersey or Philly, or you're listening on the Internet and you're living in New York or in Connecticut, this is worth the trip. It's a day trip. You know, you do the vineyard, and you do the restaurant. It's just gorgeous. And Chaz Valenza, the co-owner with his brother of the restaurant, is a writer for Op-Ed News. And so this is all in the family here. So it would be great if you go there and let them know that you found out about it from Op-Ed News. And it's restaurants.com is where you'll go to check it out on the web. And so now it's the Rob Cole Bottom Up Radio Show, WNJC 1360 AM, sponsored by opednews.com and Zaha Restaurants and Hopewell Valley Vineyards. And we've got Pam Ladd with us tonight. Now, Pam and I were having a conversation earlier today. I did an article a day or two ago. It came out on Op-Ed News about asking the question, the end of email or emails end, and it came out today on the Huffington Post, the same article. And Pam, who denies she's a Luddite, says, hey, email's better. And the article basically says that the social networking technologies, Facebook and Twitter, are growing at a faster pace than email is now. And more people are actually using them than email. And so, Pam, what was your response?
Other than to laugh when you called me a Luddite.
Oh, yes. don't forget to do that, darling.
Actually, I had several responses. One of which was, I don't think it's an either-or choice, but two was to question your premise that the social networking kind of communication, the soundbite, is the way of the future, because it's so unsatisfying. Yeah, it's great for a superficial conversation. It's great to share a tidbit of news, but in terms of communication, it lacks. That was my response.
Yeah. Well, I think what's interesting is they're different. They're really different. I think.
Right.
I can't argue with you that when I send you an email or you send me an email, I'm going to get more personal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you more private stuff because, hey, I'm posting on Facebook. It's a lot of people are going to see it.
Right.
So it's really different. But on the other hand, we're in a lot more regular contact, I think, because of Facebook.
Yes, I'm certainly not. Go ahead.
Say it again.
I started to interrupt you, and I'm trying not to. I was going to say that, yes, the Facebook and the other social networking sites, and frankly, the only one that I do bother with is Facebook, and this is not an ad for Facebook because I think it has its major flaws, is that there is an advantage in at least sort of keeping in contact with a lot of people that you can't do in another way. But it truly does lack that degree of intimacy.
Well, it does. There's no doubt about it. But it, like I said, it's different. And I think what's interesting, though, and this is where our conversation kind of went this morning, is that there's a new generation that is moving away from the more intimate kinds of communication. I mean, if you're under 25 or 30 even, you're less likely to want to talk on the phone.
Mm-hmm.
You're more likely to want to text or instant message because that's how you grew up. And phones are something that they're not going to look at or deal with. And newspapers and letter writing, forget it. And email is in that same category. It's, you know, email, oh, I haven't looked at my, I don't look at my email much. I use Facebook for most of my stuff. Because, you know, people can use Facebook to send private messages, too.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, I know a couple people who are somewhat of celebrities, and that's how they, people get in touch with them, is their Facebook connection. So,
yeah.
You know, it's changing. And it's changing not only, and this is where our conversation went and where I want to take it now, is we were talking about how the brain is changing. People's brains are really different now than they were 20 or 30 or 40 years ago because the way they grow up and the way that they interact with the web and the media and the way they communicate. And you brought up a really important question is, well, what about when they have children?
Well, to just chime in on that again, after you and I had talked this morning, I was out in the village where I live. It's a small town, and I live way up near the Canadian border now. And
Vermont.
I saw, yeah, northern Vermont. So I'll touch base with you in a few minutes about your opening statements and Bernie Sanders. But to go back to this, I saw two people walking down the street, both of them pushing strollers, and both of them yapping on their cell phones. Now, these were two young women. But there was no connection with either of their kids, and they certainly weren't connecting with each other. What is that modeling for children? Because that's how children learn.
Well, it's not just modeling. It's the children are, well, I guess you're right. It's modeling. You're teaching the children to ignore the people you love.
You're teaching your children to ignore the moment. You're teaching your children that your attention is somewhere else, somewhere other, somewhere not in your immediate locale.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, when I'm in the car, and I have anybody in the car with me, I try not to be on the phone. And I'm usually very short with anybody who calls me, if I even answer the phone at all.
If you're in the car, you shouldn't be on the phone, period.
Shh, don't tell anybody. I do use it in an earphone. I mean, so it's not like I'm holding the phone up to my head or anything. But
you're still distracted.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Not quite reading text messages, but but you're right. I mean, this really takes it down to what you've just described. It's tragic when you see that. We know. I mean, you and I have both been in the field of the brain and of psychophysiology,
right.
And we know that infants grow up needing, absolutely requiring. This is like not a thing like, they need it. This is like their brains don't work properly if they don't get it.
Exactly.
They need maternal eye contact. They need FaceTime with their mother. And when you see that. These moments where the mother could be intimately with the child and that's not happening. And, you know, they're on the phone and it's managing these kids' time. You know, these are the kids that are going to grow up babysat by the television and video games
mm-hmm.
and computers. And
where do they learn to connect? Where do they learn empathy? And if you look at the problems, I mean, you're talking about America being in trouble. America is in trouble, but so are many other countries. If we don't learn to connect with each other, if we don't feel empathy for other, then we continue down the path that we're on. We continue to pick fights because we have no ability to relate to the person at the other end. Part of why the strategy that the U.S. is employing right now along the Afghani-Pakistani border is just so easy for the U.S. to do is it's so anonymous. If you have drone planes that are dropping bombs on villages, oh, well, you're not there. You're not seeing it. You don't know. War at a distance is very easy.
And
we're going to build generations who see that. They see that as a video game.
Well, you know, you're away from Philly now, but Philadelphia now has something unique. It has the Army Experience Center, which is a unique experiment that the Army spent about $15
right.
million dollars creating in Philadelphia, about 10 minutes from my home, where kids can, as young as 13, can go in and play killer games, where they're killing ragheads, basically. And they can go into a real helicopter and play a video game in a helicopter or a Humvee, and they record their scores, so they actually know who the really good players are,
right.
I think. And these kids are basically encouraged to love to kill. And, you know, they say they're not doing recruiting there, but they actually get people from there.
Of course they are.
This is the place where our reporter was arrested for taking pictures of protesters being arrested. So, you know, we've got this culture now that is really programming children to be killers. I mean, and these are the kids who end up controlling the drones. I'm sure that the people controlling the drones are under 30 expert video gamers.
Exactly.
Who now can push the button, and they know from the video that they're observing that they've actually killed people.
Right.
And I wonder how many kids are out there who drool at that idea. Wow, wouldn't it be cool if I wasn't playing a game, if I was flying a drone and people died and I blew their brains out?
Well, we're not teaching empathy. We're not providing an environment that nurtures in that way. So sure, why wouldn't they? One of the things, I mean, you're describing Philadelphia, but one of the things that's happening up here, I live right on the Canadian border. One of the little towns where I work has streets that are literally divided. One half is Canada, one half is Vermont. They're now putting up gates beyond which you cannot cross without going through passport check. The kids who have grown up playing on that street with each other are now separated. They can only look at each other over the gate. Their parents can be fined if the kids run across.
Wow.
If you back your car, if you live on one side and you back your car a little too far across the road just to get it out of your driveway, you can be ticketed.
But because they don't have gates everywhere. They've just got a dividing line?
Right. And it's an invisible dividing line. You have no way of knowing until you
That's
see the flashing blue light coming behind you.
We are setting
up an atmosphere of divisiveness, of fear.
Well, you know, this gets into, you know, I call this the bottom-up radio show because drawing boundaries like that is a top-down kind of a thing, bottom-up way of thinking and being and interacting is participatory and inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And top-down thinking does this kind of boundary creation. And, you know, I'm sure that people are going to argue, well, the terrorists are out there and they're going to kill us. Well.
Yeah, and they're certainly playing like all the other 5- and 6-year-olds on that street. Sure.
Yeah.
It's interesting Go ahead.
If they wanted to, they could just put cameras there. They got enough cameras, they could put them everywhere.
They probably already have.
Well, you know, then there's this kid in I think it was Maryland,
who
brought a Boy Scout knife to school. He's a 6-year-old kid, and they were going to put him in reform school for 45 days. This is craziness. This is,
of course,
and then the school's response was, well, we have a firm rule, you know, and these kind of rules are all over the country.
Absolutely.
And what I really believe is what happens is top down. Dominator type control people, these people who, you know, I created a website for them a couple years ago. Not a couple, 6 or 7 or 8 years ago. I got disgusted with these control freaks, and I created a website called sphincterpolice.com. I apologize, it hasn't been updated in a long time. But it's there, it's still up there, sphincterpolice.com. For control freaks, people who want to go to the bathroom and have it come out neatly wrapped in cellophane. and they want everything in their life that way, and they want my life and your life that way, too. You know, there are now some people who are like that get diagnosed with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. And, you know, it's an affliction, but I don't want that affliction.
WNJC 1360, Washington Township, New Jersey.
If the child brings a knife to school, then this is what must be done, and there is no discretion from the principal or the teachers. This is an example of a top-down kind of control freak that says, I don't trust the people who have the jobs of responsibility in our society, so I'm going to pass a law so that I don't have to worry about them, and there is no trust. And that's the direction that that's what we've been living in for a long time. And some people want to make it even worse. We have
right.
to fight that. We really have to fight that.
Well, how can we say on the one hand we're this wonderful democracy, and on the other there's clearly nothing democratic about this? We've taken the people out of this.
Well, you know, I started the conversation, the show tonight, talking about how we're stuck with an antique democracy. I mean, I love the United States, and I'm
it's
proud of it.
It's not a democracy. It's a republic.
Yeah. Well, that's what's the difference, Pam?
I couldn't give you the technical terms anymore, but when I took my little citizenship exam, that was one of the definitions I was supposed to remember. I can probably look it up, but...
Well, then, you're Australian? Well,
no,
Welsh. Well,
neither. Try
where
again.
Are you from?
I'm English Scots.
English Scot. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Now, so you've got a parliament. You've got a House of Commons and a House of Lords
yeah.
there, right?
Right. But there's nothing democratic about the House of Lords.
Yeah, so they're stuck with the problem, too. And how old is the House of Lords? How long has that been around?
It's as old as dirt, because the House of Commons is the much newer version. The House of Lords is the ruling class. When
right.
the Labour government was elected a few rounds back, they tried to change it, and the way they changed it was by creating a whole new batch of peers, lords, who would not be who would be peers, but only for their lifetime. And what they did was stick in old politicians. So they just created a different kind of old boys' network.
Mm.
Now that's supposed to be the balance of the House of Commons, but it's not. And the House of Commons, although it probably works a little more effectively than what we have here, it still has major problems. And as long as there's only a two-party system anywhere, you're going to see the same problems.
Yeah, well, the two-party system is a real problem. And the problem is that the two parties stop new parties from having any influence or opportunity.
Of course. Because what on earth would they want to change for? I mean, people polarize into saying, oh, I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican. But frankly, what's the difference? We polarize into saying my side's the good side, your side's the bad side. But when you look down the middle, it's true there's a difference on the wings of either of the parties. But the stripe down the middle, what's the difference?
Yep.
What is the difference between a blue dog Democrat and a Republican?
Well, you know, the news tonight about how Lindsey Graham is getting eviscerated by the right-wingers and the right-wing side of his party, which is so
mm-hmm.
right-wing, it's unbelievable,
mm-hmm.
Is interesting. You have to wonder whether Olympia Snowe and Susan Collins from Maine
mm-hmm.
aren't going to even stay in the Republican Party, or they'll have to end up doing what
Arlen Specter did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now the problem is, you know, you get people like Arlen Specter calling himself a Democrat, and that's a joke. Because right now the Democrats have the problem of having all these blue dogs. But, I wanted to stay with, you know, we had a very interesting conversation started this morning talking
mm-hmm.
about how the technology was changing brains. And I've been working on this book about bottom up, about the idea that our culture is changing and that our people, that our young people's brains are changing. And on Saturday, I had an interesting experience. But first, I'm going to need to do a station ID. This is the Rob Call Bottom Up Radio Show, WNJC 1360, reaching South Jersey and Metro Philly and on the web, the whole wide world. It's sponsored by opednews.com and Za Restaurant at zarestaurants.com. And it's opednews.com. And Op-Ed News, if you haven't discovered it yet, is one of the further left progressive liberal sites where we're proud to criticize Republicans and Democrats alike. Anyone who's not taking care of the people of the United States. We're a very populist website. And this week, we're going after Obama. We're going after Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and Max Baucus and Olympia Snowe and all the Republicans and most of the Democrats, because America needs more than they're giving us, and they're letting us down, and they're failing us. So check it out, opednews.com, and you will find, if you're not happy with those crews, probably something there that you like. And I'm talking to Pam Ladds, an old colleague and friend from the world of psychology and biofeedback, and we're talking about how our culture is changing and the neuropsychology of young people is changing. And what I was saying is that this weekend I was hanging out with an older cousin. She's 77, and I was telling her about this bottom-up book I'm working on and about how people's brains are changing and how, because of that, people don't communicate the same way. And on Monday, the Wall Street Journal had this article about the end of email, and I wrote a piece called Email's End, and I cited that article, and I talked about how young people don't use email as much as older people do. Young people don't use phones. Newspapers, forget it. They don't read them at all. My cousin, her response was, oh, those young people, they can't do the stuff we could do there. They can't do math. They have to use calculators. They can't even talk on the phone. I go, no, they don't want to talk on the phone because that's not what they do. And they think differently. And then Pam brought up about how this is changing the way the human psyche is. And we started talking about autism. You know, the number of people with autism has exploded. But if you think about it, autistic people are people who don't connect with other people at the same level. There's an autistic spectrum of disorders, and some people don't have autism, they have Asperger's. Those people are more highly functional, although autistic people can be very highly functional too, but just not real great at the social interaction. And the way that we're interacting with technology, I think it's a good thing that the world is becoming more bottom-up. I think that the top-down, hierarchical, dominator control model that was necessary or that came along with the development of civilization, it limits some of our abilities and our potentials as humans and our abilities to work together. But on the other hand, some of those same technologies are causing some deficits and some losses in the way we relate to each other. And this is where Pam had some interesting observations. So tell me what you've been thinking about this, Pam. What about the autism? Where do you think that's taking us?
In the whole of the autism spectrum, with autism being at one extreme and the pervasive developmental disorder at the other, it's certainly, we can debate about what the cause is or what the treatment is or what the issue is, but surely the piece that is the most relevant is what does it mean for the future? What does it mean for the future of people? And if one of the problems that's caused by that kind of pervasive developmental disorder is an inability to connect and to relate, what does that mean for the future of us as a species? In the long
what
term.
What does it mean? Well, keep going.
Well, if it means that we are unable to form relationships, if it means that we are unable to live in communities and have that community have meaning and value, does it prevent us from having a future as a species? And, of course, there are some who would say, well, we've screwed up what we've got, so that's probably not a bad idea. But that's a little pessimistic.
Well, no, but you could take it further. If we don't see how we live in an environment that does not just include humans, but that includes the diversity of the species, and
exactly.
That humans don't have the right to destroy that environment so it wipes out thousands and thousands of species.
Well, we've certainly
where are
shown
we going?
Right, we've certainly shown ourselves to be the most destructive species on the planet, without any question.
We
appear to have no ability to slow that down.
Did you read the book Ishmael?
Yes, I did. And if we even have a desire to slow it down, and I'm not convinced that we do. I think there are certainly individuals who do. But at the same time, I don't see those individuals saying enough already. Stop.
Well, I think there has to be some... People have to have incentives, and they also have to have options.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it takes leadership to do that. You're not going to have corporations do it, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I keep a book. I read this book a couple years ago, and it really hit me hard. I read this book in the early days of the Bush administration. It's a book by Sinclair Lewis called It Can't Happen Here.
Mm-hmm.
You ever read it?
No, I haven't read it. I've heard of it. And it may be from you that I heard of it.
Sinclair Lewis wrote this book in the mid-1930s, and basically it's a novel that describes a group of basically authoritarian dictatorship-type people taking over the United States. A president who's a fundamentalist who comes in, and he starts attacking education, replacing professors with loyal party members. And it kind of replayed what happened in Nazi Germany shortly before the World War II began.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends up that real patriotic Americans get put into prison camps. And, now it's amazing how much of this fear of prison camps is being discussed right now on the left and the right.
They exist, so it's not a groundless fear.
I keep hearing about them, yeah. But I got to tell you, I have in the last year or two lost a lot of patience with conspiracy theorists. It's a frustrating thing for me. I mean, I was one of the people who originally signed the 9/11 truth document.
Mm-hmm.
Before there were 9/11 truthers.
Right.
And I don't think I would have signed it if the truthers were around, because frankly, truthers can be incredibly obnoxious, ignorant, rude people who are totally obsessed fanatics. And yeah. I'll say it. They are totally obsessed fanatics. So what they do is they basically say, why are you talking about this other issue like health care when you haven't done the reopen the investigation of 9/11? Well, I agree. I think there are an awful lot of people who agree that 9/11 should be reopened, that there are incredible mm-hmm. amounts of questions with that.
Right.
But you still got to, there are still 50 million people without health insurance.
Right.
We still have not enough regulation of the banks. There are all kinds of other problems that have to be dealt with simultaneously. And we should do that. We should ask those questions, but it's not the only thing out there.
And we should be able to multitask in terms of issues, obviously.
Yeah.
We have to, because we're not one-dimensional.
Exactly.
But again, I mean, the thing with the conspiracy theorists or any other kind of theorist is the bottom line is fear. Fear is used as a motivator, whichever side of whatever issue you're on. We're all doing that. We're all being controlled, and we're all controlling others through fear.
Well, fear and anger and hate, I think there's a lot of that that's been building, too.
What's the difference? Aren't anger and hate about fear? Fear of the other, fear of not having enough?
Hmm.
So what it comes down to.
That's fear. So what do we do about it?
Bring it out into the cold light of day, for one thing, because reality is sometimes a really good way of looking at fear. I mean, the current issue and the current drama of swine flu, just before I came and got on the phone, there was something flashing across the screen about first swine flu death in Vermont. Fear. But what is the reality of this? If we just look at the headline, then we react to that. If we react to, there is a sex offender living near you, without looking at what does that mean? I mean, when we talk about a, quote, sex offender, which, of course, is the other panic issue right now, half the time what we're talking about is an 18-year-old who had sex with his 16-year-old girlfriend. That is being categorized in the same way, and they're being asked to register as sex offenders. But so instead of looking at what constitutes a sex offender and breaking down the figures, we assume that when we see that as a sign, it means there's some raving pedophile out there waiting to snatch our kids off the street. But the evidence isn't there to support that. So where I live, which is sort of in the middle of nowhere, and you probably couldn't get much safer, parents are escorting their 9, 10, and 11-year-olds to the bus stop, which is less than half a house away, just in case.
Hi, Rob.
Hello.
We have a call for you. Michael, would you like to accept it?
Yeah, as long as my producer stays on the line, so when I say we need to end the call, you can end the call. Go ahead, Michael.
Alright, hang on, I'll cover
this. There's so many interesting things that you're talking about.
Rob, Michael, hold on. We actually lost Rob. That's never happened before.
WNJC, we've lost Rob Cahal, and we're going to attempt to get him back here. We've never had that issue before, so again, stand by as we attempt.
Welcome to the conference call, a service. This conference call is now. Please announce yourself.
So, matter of fact, it's time to do it. Station ID again. This is Rob Call, the Rob Call Bottom Up Radio Show.
WNJC 1360 AM.
Sponsored by the Zaha Restaurant.
The idiot doesn't even know we lost him.
And OppoNews.com. Progressive and liberal news.
Rob, we have your caller mic on the air.
Oh, okay, good. Michael, are you there now?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Can you hear me?
So tell, where are you from, Michael?
I'm from St. Petersburg, Florida. I'm listening to you over my laptop computer.
Cool.
Oh, great. What do you have to say, Mike?
Well, a couple of things. I developed some software to teach the alphabet and numbers using dolphins to do the teaching. And I feel that it's really the perfect thing to make available to people who have autistic children, because children, even when they're autistic, they respond to dolphins. And so you can identify a kid who's going to be autistic by how he responds to the dolphins when he's only like a year old or something like that. But then you started talking about some other things that I found of real interest, like this idea of camps to put people in. Actually, that was an idea that was started by J. Edgar Hoover, and it's in the Church Committee report. What's that? I shut my sound off, but I can hear you in my telephone.
Go ahead, Michael. Keep telling it. You're talking about the camps.
Yes. J. Edgar Hoover had the idea that if there would be an outgrowth of the anti-war movement, Hoffman and Rubin and everything that happened in Chicago in 68, that they would have camps somewhere where they would take all these people, so that if it looked like there was a quote-unquote revolution, then they would just go around and start arresting all the people that they thought were leftists, and they were going to take them and put them in some camp somewhere. Which I thought, that's in the Church Committee reports, Books 2 and Books 3. It's online. It's called COINTEL, COINTEL, pro.org. I'm pretty sure.
Actually, we've done a lot of articles on COINTEL Pro on opednews.com. It's some scary stuff there. It's true. There are people who just love this kind of idea. I find it hard to believe that it's going to happen, and I don't obsess about it. But some people do. I mean, some people, that's what they write about every day, and
right. That's
what their emails are about. But I don't want to go there that much. I mean, I'm sorry. I just don't think that we're close to that at this point. What do you think, Pam?
I think that we're closer to it in terms of quarantining, because I think there's enough panic around that. And that's been written recently into a lot of the public health codes that have been written in relation to H1N1. So whether that means...
Okay, you know,
That doesn't necessarily mean sweeping people up and marching them off to some camp. But quarantining is something that's similar. It's shutting people down.
Well, that's true.
The country's so big, it's really difficult. Who are you going to pick? I mean, who are you going to choose? What gets me is that many, many years ago, I was working on this giant book in 1970 at the University of Buffalo. And this graduate student who was famous on the campus for being a Marxist-Leninist, whatever, was walking down the hall, and he sees me, and he says, "You, when the revolution comes, we're going to come and knock on your door and take you away." And I thought, gee, golly, you know, why would the guy think like that? And then after he left the campus, some administrator told me that they thought that he was actually FBI during the whole rigmarole of being a Marxist-Leninist. So that makes sense based on what Hoover wrote.
Our nation is so polarized right now that you've got people all the way out to the edges on both sides that are really far out. And, you know, I think I'm pretty left, but some of the people out there, I think they're outer space, really. Some of the people who are talking about total revolution, I don't know. I mean, I have talked a lot lately about how the only way we're going that Dennis Kucinich has talked about health care as a human right and as a civil right, and Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and Congressional Representative John Lewis and the Freedom Riders, they all knew what to do to get the civil rights for the blacks. And that was civil disobedience. And that's not revolution, though. That's been a part of American history since its founding. And it's not a revolution. It's not violent. But the other side of this is we have a problem with the police. That we have what is emerging to be a really ugly police state, particularly in Philadelphia. The Philadelphia police have a reputation of being flagrant abusers of the Constitution.
And have had for many years.
It's everywhere.
That's
I've been
The police business is
everywhere. You know, Philadelphia has had the honor of having city blocks blown up and burned down by police.
Right, I lived there then.
Yes.
All right, I'll leave you guys with just a couple, just one simple thought. A question I want to ask you, Rob. Do you receive and answer your own email?
I do. Rob, yes, my email is rob@opednews.com, and I'm happy to hear from anybody who's listening to the show or who reads opednews.com. rob@opednews.com.
I'm going to send you an email tomorrow morning, and it will have in the subject line.
So the other thing is, Mike, you know, just a good for, thanks for listening. You know, Op-Ed News publishes articles by just about anybody who can write intelligently, we're known as the people's media site because you don't have to be famous to publish with us. Just sign up as a member, submit your article. We have about 40 volunteer editors who evaluate writing based on whether it's good writing with good thinking. If you're a right-wing nut and you're going to post a paste-up from an email that you got that says the same thing that's been said a thousand times, you know, we're not going to run it. But even we even publish some right-winger stuff, even though we're a progressive site, because they want a good conversation.
Let me leave you with this thought, Rob, and I'll send you an email tomorrow morning with my name in the subject line. This is the good ship Mother Earth. Whatever deck you live on, the cards are dealt out evenly. When it comes time to change the course of human history, on the good ship Mother Earth, and you could spell Earth, U-R-F, Earth. All the world cries out for is a spokesman.
Thanks, Mike, and I look forward to your email.
All right, talk to you tomorrow.
Yeah, it's nice to get calls from around the country.
This area was this big. It's great.
We've had emails come in afterwards that people are listening to the program in Australia.
That's phenomenal. I mean, that's the really good side about technology, the ease of access to information, to different opinions. That really is the wonderful part about technology.
Well, and what it's done is it's changed the dimensions of community. It's no longer restricted to who you can walk to or ride a horse to.
Exactly.
It's totally different. You know, every morning almost, I get an instant message from Mohammed Khurshid, who is has become my friend, who lives in part-time in Peshawar and part-time in Azure province, where his next-door neighbor's home was bombed by a drone. Where he hears explosions from Taliban suicide bombers and things like that. I mean, and so, you know, yet we have almost a daily instant message conversation. You know, it's just amazing. I have a conversation with him one moment, another minute I have one with my son, who's at college, and that has changed so much. I mean, it's made the world so much smaller, really.
Right. I mean, one of the wonderful things, again, about technology is that there's an ability to connect a class of kids in Philadelphia with a small program in South Africa that's in the middle of building a school, and they're literally building it brick by brick. And one of the people who's organizing that project is somebody who lives part of the year in Philadelphia, a musician in Philadelphia. So the Philadelphia kids and kids in other parts of the state can actually connect with the children who are living in this village for whom school is such a wonderful thing, as opposed to the attitude that most kids here have about school, ho-hum. But here are kids who are walking 2.5 hours to school, usually without food, who now are going to have a school in their own village. And the kids in the Philadelphia schools are helping raise money to, quote, raise the roof or buy a brick or whatever the slogan was. So programs like that are wonderful. Those kids are now learning it's a small world and these are real people.
Well, they're not just wonderful. I mean, last year I had an opportunity to interview Madeleine Albright.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to her about the bottom-up diplomacy, and she said it's exactly that kind of a program that breaks the barriers down, that helps to make peace happen and make progress happen between nations. And, God, we need to have a lot more of it. And, it's interesting. There's the State Department has put out a grant now for some projects to help with social networking in the Middle East. And that's the kind of thing that could really make a difference. But, of course, you know, the other side of it is social networking can get really ugly, too. I mean, there's all kinds of flamers out there, we have them on the op-ed news site occasionally, too, somebody who just, you know, attacks somebody because they disagree with them or they're different.
That was true for the old email listservs. And you and I have both been a part of a biofeedback listserv where we regularly saw people try and verbally gun each other down.
Oh, I've been on many listservs like that. And before that, there were CompuServe forums back when CompuServe was bigger than AOL.
And before that, people did it over the phone. And before that, they did it in person. There's always people who don't want to be open to change, who don't want to learn that there's a difference. And learn how to value different opinions and grow from that.
So, but, you know, I really believe that overall there are a lot of good opportunities that are coming with the technology that we have now that are in I would say, yes, it could be that more people are becoming autistic. Can you imagine, I wonder, can a world exist with, I mean, how much autism could the world tolerate? I mean, do autistic people have children?
Biologically, why not? Sure.
Biologically, yes, but could they raise them? Could they? Do autistic children get married? I don't know with this stuff. I'm ignorant on this. So, opednews.com. Drop me an email. Let me know about this. Write an article about it, because I don't know, and I'll bet you a lot of people would be interested in that. Do they have sex?
You'll probably get a lot of replies, and that's good. But really, I mean, we're not talking about autism. We're talking about a way of communicating which does not connect in a way that the rest of us are used to. We're talking about connection that lacks empathy. We're talking about being unable to meet the criteria that we believe are necessary to raise a child, the imperatives like touch and eye contact, etc.
Well, wait. I can put a right pointing arrow and a G, then a left pointing arrow, then a G, then a right pointing arrow, and that's like a grin when I do a message. I mean, isn't that what is empathy? What is empathy, and
sure isn't a little smiley. Empathy is being able to emotionally connect and understand the other person's point of view.
Can you do that on Facebook?
I don't think so. I think that it's much harder to do it that way because you're restricted to however many characters.
And also, it's public. You really can't get personal. You can't have... You can have private conversations, but, it's a shame that Facebook doesn't have a way to allow private responses to public statements.
Right.
You can do that on listservs, generally. You can't do it on Facebook, I don't think. Look, the technology is still emerging. You can do it on Twitter. You can do it on Twitter. And follow me on Twitter at Rob Call, R-O-B-K-A-L-L, or opednews.com, both of them. And I think it's rcall, facebook.com/rcall is my other thing. So, we're wrapping up. This is the end of the show. It's been the Rob Call Bottom Up Radio Show, WNJC 1360. I've been talking to Pam Ladds about is it the end of email and what's the effect of Facebook.